And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I am talking about this show goes from Huntsville back over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden. I'm talking about way on down yonder in that prettiest little town on the plains called Auburn. I even mean to say there's big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. All right, so we are back right now. I gotta say, J.P., this was a big doings weekend for sports.
It was.
I am sure that consumed part of your time on the ump on the off the bench radio show Saturday morning.
Yeah, just about all of it. Yeah.
I'm also pretty sure that while you were pulling for Jalen Hurts, you actually predicted Kansas City.
I did. I thought they were going to use some of their black magic that they've used all year to find a way to win.
But who do they do?
It appears they ran out of black magic, so there's that. And they got stomped. You know, it wasn't even close.
Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. I had to miss a part of it. I lost track of time, and I was like, oh, my gosh, it's already on. And I go in, and it's almost halftime. I'm like, wait a minute. That can't be right. It was like 34-0 at the halftime? Is that what it was?
It may have been 17-0 at half. It was 17 or 20.
I think it was 20-something.
But you get to 30. I think it was 34-0 going into the fourth.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I watched the whole second half, and I was like, this is not what I expected.
What annoyed me was, you know, Tom Brady was calling the game, and of course, one point, he goes, well, you know, Tom, you were down big at one Super Bowl, were you? And I was sitting there, I was like, stop, because that reminded me when the Falcons blew a 28-3 lead against Tom Brady. Yeah, they had to mention that a couple times.
Brady's commentary, I will say this, at one point I was like, who is that voice? Oh, that's Brady. But yeah. But Brady's commentary is more often along the lines of, I remember one time.
Yeah. You know, my first 9 Super Bowls,
Yeah. There was that one game. Yeah. Well, you know, I saw him yelling at the refs. I did that all the time. They used to get on to me. I only had one technical, though. Wish I'd had more.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
His voice isn't very great to hear, I don't think, either. But, I mean, he's the GOAT, so you got to put him on there.
Yeah, I mean, what do you say? He could have a voice like, you know, Minnie Mouse. He'd still be all right because. Yeah. But what'd you think of, Jalen Hurts, he kind of came out and did the thing, didn't he?
That may have been the best game of his career.
His career.
I mean, if I would have told, you know, if I went back in time and told myself Jalen was going to have the best game of his career, I would have figured running the ball and not throwing the ball. But, I mean, he had one interception that was kind of, you know, he was getting blitzed and kind of threw it up. But other than that, I feel like he was on the money. That touchdown pass to Devontae Smith was beautiful.
How many was that, like a 60-yard pass?
It was like 40 or 50 yards, something like that. Yeah,
in the bucket, man.
Literally perfect. And he's improved a lot. Throughout, not just since college, but in his time in the NFL. But then you look at his story, like literally like a storybook career of, you know, getting benched in the national championship game, staying in Alabama after that year, being the backup, being a good teammate, and then going to the NFL, losing in the first Super Bowl, and coming back, and then winning Super Bowl MVP is like the. Yeah. I have so much respect for Jalen Hurts' patience and perseverance.
And he gave all credit to God.
Yep.
Gotta love that.
Yeah.
I'll say this too. That's one of the things I noticed, aside from the fact that we had so much unabashed patriotism in the mix, it was also interesting that we had just like evidence of players expounding on their faith everywhere. I mean, there was even someone I retweeted this morning on my social media on X that did a whole compilation of all the players who gave credit to Jesus Christ or, you know, to their relationship with the Lord. It was everywhere.
Yeah, and it was the same in college football, too. I feel like there was a ton of people being outspoken about their faith in football all this year. It's definitely a culture shift, for sure.
There is. And I wonder how much of it is a shift and how much is a shift in the media being willing to show it. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. All I know is I saw a lot more of it, and it's also very refreshing, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I got so sick of the Colin Kaepernick, you know, time frame when there were all these pampered athletes who were downgrading our country and kneeling at the flag, and nothing was good enough, and whole teams were staying in the locker room during the anthem, and I'm like, man, what the heck? You guys are, like, just, you know, forgetting the fact that you're getting rich in the country that you're just denigrating right now.
You're getting paid to play football. Yeah. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. My game went way back up all of a sudden, by the way. I don't know what's happening, but I'm going up and down. So if I sound like I'm getting loud, it's my fault. But anyway, hey, bottom line is I got a bunch of text messages. Good game, though. Any further thoughts you want to throw on it?
Other than all the old heads bashing the halftime performance, I thought it was pretty good.
Hang on a second. Are you calling me an old head? Did you just say that?
You did bash it. I wasn't talking about you. I've just seen a lot of people saying, when are we going to have a George Strait halftime performance?
I have no problem with that, by the way. No, I did actually tag on to somebody. There's that one with Brad Pitt, by the way, on the screen. I did see somebody posted about, you know, old guys not knowing, and I went ahead and said, I was going to go ahead and answer. Here are the things that were coming out of my mouth, and I said things like, what did he say? And remember back when Creed played the halftime show? And and then I think the last thing I quoted myself saying was, you care if I just mute this during the halftime? All right, listen, I'm going to take some text messages and then we'll jump into the material. I got plenty of stuff laid on for you today. Don't forget, coming up top of the hour, we've got our friend Emily Jones calling in. But yes, text lines are indeed open, 833-687-4448. A bunch of y'all chimed in on both Super Bowl and my monologue. Gary from Decatur says, speaking of Hollywood, have you noticed that a lot of celebrities moving out of the country are on the leaked Epstein Island visitors list? Is there a leaked list? I've not seen a leaked list.
I don't know if it's real, but they're out there.
Okay, I don't trust anything until it's been validated, all right? There's been two or three stories in the last few days that I've said, I can't go with that until we have some more validation of it. I had one that was like, Trump just did away with the Department of Education. Actually, nothing's out there saying that he did. Is he working towards it? Probably. Wendell from Baton Rouge said, not a Super Bowl commercial, but did you see the Army's new recruitment video? I did. Oh, for Special Forces? I did not. I need to check it out. I will look for it. Thank you very much, Wendell. Bruce from Springville says, what's another name for Facebook gatekeepers? Zuckerberg's bootlickers. Okay. It works. John from Huntsville, Phil's spectacular monologue also. JP, I told you the Eagles are a better team. I got to say, overall, the Super Bowl gets a great F from me. So the commercials were just not that funny, and most of them were way too woke for my taste. Yeah, there was the one Nike had to have the all-girl flag football team beating the guy athletes, and the guy athletes were all just punks, and, you know, that was weird.
What was with there was another Nike commercial promoting girl sports. It's like, that's great. However, I guarantee you Nike was all for transgenders in women's sports.
Oh,
so they're not really pro-woman. They're just, they like to appear pro-woman.
I did like Bud Light's effort to get back in good graces.
Yeah, I think they're back.
I think they're coming back. I think there are people who are like, we've missed you. Are you really back? They're waiting to see. Mm. I liked Harrison Ford's Jeep commercial.
Yeah, it was good.
And by the way, he took a complete poke at Ford. I don't know if you saw it, mm-mm, but at one point the Jeep blew past a Ford Bronco on the trail and like sneered at them as they went by. And then at the end he goes, this is my Jeep and I really like it, even though my last name is Ford. It's like, wow. Anyway, John says the game was over at halftime. And he says he would have preferred a Carrie Underwood halftime show because at least she knows how to sing with or without music. So there you go.
And he says he has a crush on Carrie Underwood.
Oh, I missed the last line. It is a crush. There you go. Brian from Huntsville, as to the monologue, he says, in the sentiments of Gabby Johnson in Blazing Saddles, Reverend. Scott from Athens says, bold hearted men are always called mean-spirited by cowards. Yes, indeed. Allie from Athens, by the way, we were having trouble getting her text the other day, but there's one right there. Says, Colonel, could you possibly be referring to Arnold Schwarzenegger in Kindergarten Cop when he looks at the kids and says, you are soft? That could probably make somebody unhappy these days. Might be a tumor. Jeff from Indiana says, if Charlene doesn't like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, she just had her Kentucky license plate revoked or license revoked. He says she's not bona fide. No, she's bona fide. She just knows what she likes. Bordeaux from Harvest says, so much winning. The Dems are losing their minds. So much fun after 4 years of misery. Glory. And then David at Bucky says, JP, this is going to be interesting. Even with the loss, Auburn remains number one and Bama at the number two. That's right. I forgot that Auburn went down to Florida on Saturday, like hard. Well,
Florida came up to Auburn and being pretty bad. But if Auburn beats Vanderbilt and then Alabama beats Texas this week, we're going to have one versus two in the IBOB. which the state might explode. I don't know if they can handle. We could possibly get the number one versus two Alabama Auburn in basketball before football, which is pretty nuts.
That would be crazy.
Mm-hmm. This is both teams got to handle their business.
That's, you know, come on, bring it, fellas. All right, listen, we got plenty laid on. I'm going to come right back and jump on into the topics. You guys stay with me. We're talking about For the Kids, and then coming up top of the hour, Emily Jones with us. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Hey, check out all our social media, by the way, and I will also make an announcement right now that some of you guys are going to want to know about. In fact, it's already happening. But a bunch of you guys are already on our, we have thousands of people getting our daily email blast called the Right Side Report. It comes out and it tells you, you know, basically like what's going to be on the show today, who the guests are going to be sometimes. We got podcast information. We got links to things we got going on. And ba-bam, the Right Side Media brand new merch store is going live. We got some hats, we got some shirts, we got some coffee mugs, and we got some Bulletproof Influence highball glasses, and you're going to want to see those because they're the coolest thing, I think, in there. All that stuff is now available in the merch store, but only if you're on the Right Side Report. So we're going to give advance look to those who get the Right Side Report for the next several days before we open it up to anybody else.
Till Wednesday.
Till Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So midweek. So the first 3 days of the new merch store, we decided we were going to go ahead and just slide that out there just for people who already subscribed to the Right Side Report. But if you want to get subscribed, it's no charge, by the way. All it is an email. It comes in and just tells you all about what's going on at Right Side, because we got a lot going on. This is not just a radio show. Right Side Media is the parent company. Right Side Radio is only one of our productions. But if you want to get sort of tied in with what we're doing, or if you want to have first dibs at the merch store, all you got to do is this number that we use on the show every day, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Just text one word, newsletter. Nothing else, just newsletter. It'll automatically trigger a response to you for you to enroll in the newsletter. No charge. It just comes to your inbox. But it has links right now to the brand new merch store. And it looks good. It does. By the way, Butters is the digital guy who sets all that stuff up. And he does great work. And so we're pretty proud of it. We're going to be adding additional merchandise here in the very near future. But the first run is already up and out, but only available if you're a newsletter folk. So be a newsletter, folk. Join us. Right Side Ruffians, get in there. All right, first dipper of the day. I'm calling this For the Kids. And I will say this. I think that, you know, I spent a lot of years professionally committed to working with kids. I did. My first job coming out of college was to work in an adolescent drug and alcohol and behavioral disorder treatment center. We had a lot of kids that I worked there, and it was deep work with deeply troubled kids. And because of my time there, I felt more and more compelled to go into full-time ministry with kids. And so I spent the next 7 years after that, basically over almost 10 and a half, 11 years, working full-time, committed to kids. I have a heart for kids. I do. It's not my day-to-day calling now, but my heart is still there, and I still think that working for Young Life Ministries is one of the best jobs I ever had. That being said, I think that we're in a place right now where I used to see things that happened to kids in some dire settings working in the treatment center and even in ministry, and I would come across things and think, oh, my gosh, you know, these kids not only need Jesus, but my gosh, they just need intervention, period. Some of the lives these kids led or had thrust upon them were just galling. And yet I would say that maybe right now we're seeing more stuff put on kids, done to kids, or exposed to kids than we ever saw in previous era, ever. I mean, I'm sitting here right now. There's a big age gap between me and JP. But JP, I still think right now you're not near as far removed from high school or anything that I was, but I think it's even worse now than it was when you were in high school, the amount of crap that's available to kids.
Yeah. It's only been like 4 years, and I feel like I would agree with that, yeah.
It's just really kind of gross sometimes what they have thrust on them. Here's the thing. What's also very apparent to me, especially in the last 4 years, is some of what was happening we couldn't see until, if there was one thing good that came out of COVID, is all of a sudden we could see inside the educational environment because everybody had to log in from home. And all of a sudden parents are like, what? You're doing what? What's on your school, you know, website? What's on your assignment list? You've got to read what? Your teacher said what? Why is there a rainbow flag hanging behind your teacher on the login you did today? I didn't know that was there. And all these things were happening, and not everywhere. There's great teachers out there, people who have a distinct calling, much like I had, to be there for kids in a good environment. But y'all, I'm looking at things like, for instance, I've got a story here off the New York Post. Just really talking about the fact that the Department of Education at the federal level, the Department of Education, even Bill Maher, the liberal commentator slash comedian, even he says, it's not like kids are getting any smarter. He says, I mean, the numbers keep getting worse and worse, and I don't know what the Department of Education, I don't know what it does, he said, except take money. All it is the middleman. And he's talking about the fact that a recent study indicated that something like a third of all eighth graders in the United States don't have basic reading skills. In eighth grade. Now, he pointed out, he says, I don't know what the Department of Education does. It just takes money. And then I've got this article from townhall.com. Came out yesterday. By the way, the one from Bill Maher came out Sunday. This one came out Sunday evening or Monday morning. The federal government has spent $1 billion through the Department of Education to indoctrinate children in DEI and social-emotional learning issues. $1,002,522,304.81 to fund DEI and social-emotional learning initiatives. These initiatives included race-based teacher recruiting and training, youth activism, restorative justice practices, many of which are modeled on far-leftist ideas. For instance, one school district in Philadelphia got $4 million to do a, quote, restorative justice program, guided by a far-left activist and former Communist Party member. We have any number of things right now that are happening that are just wrong in terms of what happens to kids, the transgender ideology, the other things that are happening in terms of, you know, perpetrators who are preying on them through social media and otherwise. But when you find out your own government is spending money to take them down roads the parents would never have agreed to, it's galling. It's also at a time, think about this, it's at a time in life when these are considered to be minors under the law. Minors who, by the way, haven't yet learned how to think critically, don't often know how to weed out the good and the bad. And so an authority figure, a teacher, is telling them, well, here's what we're going to do and why you need to think that way. And they're looking at it going, yeah, okay, you're an authority figure. I have to trust it more. Because critical thinking tells them when to set it aside, but not being a critical thinker yet puts them in a position of supposedly they're going to trust. And why should they not? It's an authority figure in their life. And yet you're finding out right now, as Trump and Doge and all of it get going, the Department of Education in D.C. spent $1 billion over the last few years to fund DEI and social-emotional learning. Well, somebody who's neck deep in all of this and really tracking it is our friend Emily Jones, and she's got legislation right now, too, we need to look at in Montgomery. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Meatloaf Monday. Yes, indeed. And I tell you, it's really something as we watch what is happening with the world trying to find access to our kids. What's galling even more so, though, is when you realize government is at the center of it or government's not doing enough to prevent it. And somebody who's really made that like her champion cause is our own friend, Emily Jones. Emily Jones, you may recall, founded Moms for Liberty in Madison, the very first chapter in the state of Alabama. She has since become somewhat of an icon or fixture in politics, especially as it relates to the social issues that impact our kids. And she also brought a bill to my attention that I want to talk about with her here in a minute. But she's on the phone right now. Emily Jones, how are you doing?
I'm doing lovely. How are y'all?
I'm doing good. By the way, I forgot to mention a minute ago, you're one of our podcasters, and your latest edition of the Controversial Mom podcast came out last night.
Yes, and it's somewhat related to what we're going to talk about today. It's almost like we planned it, even though we really didn't.
It was actually, last week, I think, when I said, hey, you want to come on Monday? And so here you are. But yeah, it was perfect timing. Folks can find your podcast on our YouTube channel, also on our website, rightsidemedia.org. You're doing a great job with that, by the way.
Thank you. I enjoy it.
Thank you. I like the name of it, The Controversial Mom. I think that's hilarious.
When I told my mom about it, she laughed in my face.
Because she knew it was true. Because you were probably a controversial daughter growing up, weren't you?
100%.
All right. Hey, I don't know if you heard this. I know that you've been a champion for what I would call conservative mom causes for the last several years. But I've got an article here from townhall.com. Came out yesterday or the day before. And it says that over the last few years, the Department of Education under the Biden administration spent just over $1 billion on DEI and SEL, social emotional learning issues. Give me your immediate thought to that.
Yeah, it makes my blood boil. And that should tell people exactly how dangerous this stuff is. If Biden and his cronies wanted to invest that kind of money into a program that indoctrinates your kids and turn them against your family.
Yeah. I mean, basically, look at the source, right?
Yep.
It was almost like unfettered attempts on the part of the Biden administration to try and get to our kids. And it's because they know they're impressionable. They know they haven't developed their critical, thinking yet. And they're not always able to screen out, especially when an authority figure in their life, like a teacher, is telling them, hey, we got a grant. We're going to teach you some new things. It's called SEL. This is awesome. And the kid goes, okay. But the parents would never have approved of it.
No, not at all. If parents knew half of what I've uncovered and learned in the past year, they would pull their kids out of public school and homeschool. I mean, SEL is truly the foundational attack on parental rights all across the country, and especially in our state, because no one knows it's there. But it's truly foundational in all these other programs that truly they do undermine kids' thinking. And it does this, and I know I've ranted about it so many times, you and your audience. It teaches tolerance and acceptance. And that sounds innocent, except for when you get into high school, and you hear a lot of high school parents now say this, that their children are very protective of anyone that identifies as gay. They've almost become this group that all people have to protect, because they've been trained that, no, you have to protect those people because they're being attacked by society.
Yeah. One,
you should love those people, but that doesn't mean you accept those lifestyles. If you're a Christian and you believe in the Bible, then you know that that is not acceptable in God's eyes, so we should not accept that.
I've said many times there's a vast difference between condemning or not condemning and then condoning. There's a big difference. You don't have to. You can not condemn and at the same time not condone. It's possible.
It is.
Okay. Well, I tell you what. This is a bit of an aside, but since we talked about SEL, remind everybody exactly what SEL is for those who aren't familiar.
It's essentially unlicensed therapy. So it focuses on regulating emotions, and this starts in pre-K. This is not something just for high school. It starts literally when kids get into any federally funded educational institution, and it teaches them to regulate their emotions, to deal with conflict management. And, my son was in third grade last year. They did a whole lesson around their emotions and how do you feel in certain situations? What do you do if you're in those situations? And it sounds very innocent, except for the fact that if a child has any type of discomfort, I'm not even going to say trauma, if they've just got something that upsets them, like, well, my mom got mad at me and spanked me because I didn't clean my room, then they have to talk about this in this group therapy style class, and they're exposing, what is private and personal to them in front of an entire group, which is very traumatic and causes long-term damage because they're having to talk about their emotions. Well, how did that feel when your mom did that? What would you like to do to not feel that way? It's therapy. It really is. It's group therapy with kids that parents have no clue that it's going on. So how does a parent counter that if you don't know that it's even happening?
You know, what's crazy is I had another article here, and I feel like I feel like I'm even kind of getting a field from our original intent to talk, but it's so good. It's good stuff. I've got the same article, the one from Town Hall, actually has a major poll that was done just about a month and a half ago. And it says that 90% of parents believe that schools ought to just focus on math and reading and other vital subjects instead of all these social cultural issues. And my thought is, who are these other 10%?
Right.
Who are the ones that think that's not what school's for? And by the way, keep them away from my kids.
Yes, keep them away from all kids. Yeah, I mean, it's such a wild and bizarre concept for parents to expect their kids to actually be taught basics when they go to school. And I mean, we were going to talk about Susan's bill, but the other thing with SEL and what it leads into is this thing called the whole child approach. And this is in Alabama schools. Alabama Department of Education has a website for it, so confirmed it is in our state. But the whole child approach is truly that the department schools are treating the whole child emotionally, socially, academically, physically, medically. So in this, it's somewhere in Tuscaloosa. I'll have to go find the details on it again. But it's a health care clinic that is attached to the school system. So if you send your child to school, you think they're going to get an education or, you know, worst case, they're getting some SEL program. But in these situations where the health care clinic is built into the school as part of the whole child approach, they now have unlimited access to health care. While you parent think your child's going to school for math and reading, they're going and meeting with a healthcare clinic down the hall.
Well, okay, and so let's jump into that for a minute. There's a bill right now, and I've got the Senate version, Senate Bill 58. In fact, Sam Gavan, who's on this show multiple times, he's one of the chief sponsors of it. In fact, he's the lead sponsor of it. Senate Bill 58. This is the one. And by the way, I was in the Senate for 8 years and I've never knew this and it didn't even really arise. And it's one of those things we discovered during COVID is that state law allows kids as young as 14 to make their own medical decisions. I've never heard that before until most recently. And so this bill would change that, right?
Yeah. Not even does it allow them. It kicks the parent out of the room. Literally, we've had parents come to us and say, I took my child to the pediatrician, and it's a 14-year-old child, to the pediatrician, and they made me leave the room because they said I was not legally allowed to be there. I mean, this mom is just like, what universe? And I'm like, yeah, it's the law in Alabama. To make this very even more maddening, Alabama has the lowest age of medical consent than any other state in the country.
That makes no sense. I'm trying to figure out how long this has been in law. In fact, I need to go back and just research the amendment to the state code that we're looking at trying to fix here. But this is literally an amendment to state code that right now under existing law, I'm reading it, says a minor who is at least 14 years of age or who has graduated high school or who is married may give legal consent to medical, dental, and mental health services for himself or herself. And I'm thinking, what? My kids, so they're not even old enough to drive yet, and yet we're saying the law in Alabama is going to assign to them the rights to make their own medical decisions. And by the way, that whoever, whatever doctor kicked the parents out of the room, go get a new doctor.
Yes.
Because I guarantee you the billing clerk at that doctor's office is going to send mom and dad the bill, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
And whose insurance was on it? Mom and dad. And who was the point of contact for emergencies? Mom and dad. So go get another doctor. Don't even stand for that.
Yep. Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I tell this story all the time. I have a friend in New Jersey was complaining that last year their legislator passed a law that reduced their medical age of consent from 18 down to 16. So New Jersey reduced theirs, and yet their age is still higher than Alabama's. I would love for someone to explain to me how Ruby Red Alabama hasn't passed this bill 15 years ago.
Well,
but it's just absurd.
I'll tell you why. Because 15 years ago, it was a Democrat-controlled bastion. It was not until 2011 that the Republicans took the state house. And I'll tell you right now, it was not until 2020 during COVID that anyone even knew this thing was buried in the law. There's no telling how long it's been there. But I don't think it got put in since Republicans have been in charge of the state house. But my question is, What are you hearing right now? Are Republicans going to change it?
They're trying. The medical association's trying really hard to, to combat this. Because, Bill, we have bad parents. And when you've got bad parents, then 14-year-olds need to make their own medical decisions. That's literally what they told our legislatures. Well, sometimes you've got bad parents. So going back to my podcast from several weeks ago, who's determining what's a bad parent?
Yeah.
Me not putting my child on an antidepressant does not make me a bad parent. That doesn't mean he gets full authority to then make his decisions.
This is madness. I tell you what, they ought to incorporate an amendment into the legislation that says that in the event that, or run a companion legislation that says that in the event that the point of contact for the insurance policy for which billing would occur is not allowed to be present for the decision making, that they cannot bill it. And I guarantee you, the medical association would change their tune real quick if that passed.
Yep, 100% they would, because it is ultimately all about the money.
So, for all of you out there listening, in case you didn't hear, we're breaking it to you right now that buried in state law has been a provision that is trying to be changed right now that allows 14-year-olds to make their own medical decisions. And by the way, that's medical, dental, and mental health, right?
Yep. Yes, all of it. It's 14-year-olds. There's a carve-out in there for young girls that want to get tested if they're pregnant or get on birth control, which I go back and forth on that one. I understand the carve-out, but also I hate it because as a parent, you should get to know that. But we've got to fix it. I mean, the medical, dental, mental health, and it spells out a lot with mental health. It actually starts attacking some of the components of SEL, which is good. It needs to go further, but if we have to chip away at it, it is what it is. But this at least starts moving parents back into the driver's seat far more than they have been for decades.
Yeah, and we can't, in my opinion, we can't be a state. It makes no sense. Our laws are supposed to be congruent, right? They're supposed to be even across the board. And if our laws say you can't drive till you're 16, you can't sign a contract until you're 19, you can't join the military till you're 18, you can't, you know, have a drink until you're 21, if all those things are true, then why would our law then allow a major decision about medical treatment be allowed at 14? Because that's below the age of consent. I mean, statutory rape occurs at 14 years
right.
old.
Right. So exactly.
You can't even consent to have relations, but yet you can consent to have medical treatment for the relations. What is going on with that?
Yep. Nobody's paid attention until now.
Well, we see it now, and I also see that I just ran long, and I'm about to go into a break. Emily Jones, host of the Controversial Mom podcast, we appreciate you, as always. Stay in the fight, and we'll talk to you again soon, all right?
Thank you. Have a good week.
All right, see you. Got to run to a break. Man, I ran long. Take it to a break there, JP. We'll come right back. I'm going to keep harping on this, you guys. Y'all need to get mad about this. This is gross. This is weird. This has to get changed. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, listen, so the bill, if you're not familiar with it, the Alabama legislature is in right now. And Senator Gavan from Huntsville has the bill, Senate Bill 58, that is designed to change the law so that you have to be 18 years old to be able to give consent for medical, dental, or mental health services. And I see no problem with that. Now, it does say, like, basically, if they're married, they've been emancipated from their family. Like, you know, I've seen it. I knew one guy who got parental consent to join the military at 17. So there are a few legal exceptions. But for the most part, you will not have, you know, mental health counseling, vaccines, be, you know, engaged in any kind of other medical treatment for, like, child, you know, not child, but I'm trying to say, sexual health and things like, you know, abortion counseling or whatever else. None of that until you're 18 years old, unless there's parental consent involved. That needs to happen. It's one of those things you find in the law, you're like, God, if I had known that when I was there. I mean, my word, this is unbelievable. But nonetheless, it's there. It's Senate Bill 58. Here's the thing. I encourage you to find your local representative or senator and tell them, this bill just makes too much good sense, and you really, really need to get this done. So Senate Bill 58, Senator Gavan from Huntsville is the lead sponsor. And it was just recently introduced. I mean, they're brand new. It just started the session last week, so there's plenty of time. But this should be a low-hanging fruit kind of bill. And the medical association is apparently opposing it. I need somebody to tell me why. I mean, like somebody from the medical association. Tell me why. Why would you not? Why would you go down the road of defending something like 14-year-olds making their own medical determinations? That's messed up. That clearly indicates that you need to be able to worm your way into a kid's life without parents being involved for reasons that parents don't want. That's the only reason why you do it. There's no other way around it. Don't try and say, well, it's very important that children have a safe space. Bull crap. There is no such thing as an adult giving a child life-changing advice without parental consent unless they have a predator mindset. In other words, we think the kids need to hear from us more than you, mom and dad. And don't think when I say predator, I'm just talking about like human trafficking and sexual misconduct. Preying upon kids is sometimes preying upon their decision-making processes, preying upon their fears and concerns, preying upon their vulnerabilities. If you're a doctor and you're advising young children without parental consent, shame on you and go find a new job. There, I've spoken. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.